Good morning, everybody. I'm Melissa Nielsen with Waldorf Essentials. If you have been drug here by somebody else or somebody sent you this link and asked you to listen to it, I want to welcome you and thank you for being willing to listen. I want to thank you for being willing to really hear something that is very dear to the person who sent it to you. And I know it's very easy for us to get up in arms about things that we don't agree about. But I think when you take the time to really listen to somebody else and what their desires are and why they're desiring it, then it helps communication, lines of communication. And I do have a ton of notes here today, so you're going to see me like looking down often. Don't usually do a lot of notes, but I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. I went to Facebook, one of our online Facebook group, the Ask Melissa and Eric group. And I just asked yesterday, what are the common struggles that you have in getting, whether it be dad or your mom or your mother-in-law or Aunt Judy on board with homeschooling, and what are some of the things that you hear and some of the struggles that you're going through. So a lot of these questions came from there. Some of them came from my own life experience. And so I just wanted to sort of lay that foundation and that groundwork. So again, my name's Melissa Nielsen. My husband and I own a company called Waldorf Essentials. We have been Waldorf homeschoolers for a long time. I have 5 children. 3 are adults that have grown. All my children went through Waldorf. We have a child that went to public school in 10th grade. I'm going to talk about him in a little bit. But I want you to know that I have experience in this. I've been around the block. We've run this company for the last 12 years, and we work extensively with homeschoolers every single day, and we homeschool our own children. And so I know what I'm talking about. I understand these struggles. I have also, Eric is my second husband, so we have a blended family situation with our older 3 children. And there were 2 times that I had to testify in court about homeschooling, and both times my knowledge and my extensive ability in what I do won our case. I also testify for others that are going through divorce situations or are being, have somebody legal that they have to report to. I have provided affidavits for those situations. So I'm saying this so that you understand that I am somebody who knows what she's talking about. And it's not coming from a platitude place. It's not coming from an ego space. I just want to sort of be very transparent about what I know and about how I know you can help the person in your life that asked you to watch this video. So I wanted to sort of get that out of the way. I do train, our company trains people, families, children, not children, sorry, people, moms and dads, and sometimes grandma. Sometimes also Waldorf school teachers on how to homeschool with Waldorf. That's what we've been doing. We've been doing that extensively for the last 7 of the years that we've been in business. We have been in business for 12 years. We've been writing homeschool curriculum all that time. Our training program came in about 7 years ago, and we go through the nuts and bolts of how to do this successfully. I also offer accountability for those families that need it. Eric and I have an accountability situation where the families that are within that purchase the accountability program are, they are accountable to us, and we make sure that they are doing what they are saying they're going to do. So that's another layer of accountability on top of our Thinking, Feeling, Willing program. So I wanted to tell you that not as a sales pitch, but as a way for you to understand that this is what I do. I train these moms, and I will guarantee you, if they do what I say, they will have success. And if you are behind them and ask them, hey, are you doing what Melissa says? They will have success. We're going to talk about more of that in a bit, but I wanted to sort of give you this idea so that you understand what it is that I do for families and how we support families as a homeschooling family and as a company. So again, I want to invite comments here in the live session. If you're watching this later on the download, if you're watching this on YouTube, please feel free to leave comments. I always answer our comments. If you would like to send me a private message, you're welcome to on Facebook, on Instagram, or you're welcome to send me an email, melissa@waldorfessentials.com. I want to make sure that I am available for any family member that has a question. And it can be, as long as it's a genuine question, not like a, well, they're just going to be weird. Don't send me those questions. We're going to talk about all of that. But I want you to know that you can ask me anything, anything. I'm an open book. You can also, if you have a question you want to address to my husband, who's here, he's just behind the camera, right, dear?
Hello.
He is, if you're a dad and you've got a man-to-man question that you want to ask, he is always happy to answer it. And you can catch him also. All of our team has access to that melissa@waldorfessentials.com email. Okay. So I wanted to get that out of the way. And again, I want to really thank you and appreciate you for being willing to come and to listen and to sort of maybe understand a little bit what the person that sent you this video is going through and what they're asking, and also maybe a little bit about what they're feeling. I want to acknowledge your love for your children and for your partner that sent this to you, or for your daughter or daughter-in-law. I want to acknowledge that, because I know that anytime we act out of or we say no to something, it's generally rooted in fear or in life experience. And we want to protect those people that are around us. So I want to acknowledge that you have this great love for your children or your grandchildren, whoever sent you this video. So I want to acknowledge that, even if it was your neighbor. I want to acknowledge that. I think often when we act, it's out of concern for somebody else. And so I want to acknowledge that concern and acknowledge that you are valid and you are okay to question. It's just how we go about it that we're going to talk about. Okay, so we're going to start with overall homeschool objections. Because, you know, there's homeschooling and then there's Waldorf homeschooling. And some people are like, I think we have to get the homeschooling objections out of the way first. So the first one that I hear a lot is children will be socially backward or awkward when they homeschool. Now, I want to tell you, when we go to school, to a brick and mortar school, whether it be public or private, you're socialized by default there. You don't have options. You don't have, you don't really get an opinion about whether or not you socialize. You don't get an opportunity to pick who you socialize with. And in life, we do get that option. You know, when we go, we might, even if we have to go to a job, a work, you know, a 9-to-5, where we have to be with other people, we get to choose how we interact with those other people. With children, it's very different. Children are sort of thrust into a situation. So when they're in a school setting, they don't really have the opportunity to choose how they socially interact. And the side effect of that is you don't get to choose what they bring home from those interactions. So when somebody says to me, are you worried about your children being socially awkward? I don't, and I never have. I never have. Like I said, we have 5 children. It is my job, though, to make sure that they do have social interaction and that it's purposeful social interaction. It's my job to make sure that whatever they do or the opportunities that they have, that they are opportunities that as a family, it fits our values, that it's something that we want to have. And I say that and I have people go, oh, well, it's people that want to sort of huddle around your children religiously and that's why you homeschool. No. But I will say that the segments of the population overall that I see coming to homeschooling in general, and I'm not talking about Waldorf, but homeschooling in general, are people who have been persecuted in school. So often they're coming home to avoid that. That doesn't mean you hide in a closet. That means you have purposeful interaction. So what does purposeful interaction look like? Well, my children have always had, and if you sort of dig in, you'll find, there are homeschool classes that happen during the day where there are actually other children there for them to interact with. So there's no social awkwardness. They get to go and they get to learn those social skills. They get to learn it in maybe a little bit more of a controlled environment than what you have experienced or what you would have in a public school or even private school situation. But it is definitely interaction. So it's our job then, and it is any mom that comes to me and says, I want to homeschool, these are my worries, these are the things that I say. What things are you doing during the week? So you want to make sure that you do have social interaction. You have to be more deliberate about it. And when we are sort of thinking about living in a deliberate way, homeschooling is a really good way to do that. You have to be deliberate about what you're doing. So our children have always had some sort of homeschool co-op. And a co-op is where parents come together, homeschooling parents come together, and they provide classes or interaction for their children. I had belonged to really big co-ops. When we lived in Idaho Falls, there was a giant co-op that had, gosh, it was not a Waldorf co-op. It was just a homeschool co-op that I think probably had, 60 to 80 or more children in it. And then I belonged to smaller co-ops. I belonged to co-ops that I've run, co-ops that I haven't run. But the idea is that a co-op is where you can come together and it's like a school setting. So I want to sort of help you breathe out about the social awkwardness. I think what you will find instead is that when you have children that are homeschooled, because they choose a little bit more who they're with, you will wonder, why is this child so delightfully different than all of the other children that I see? And a lot of that is because of the situations we put them in. Now, I will say there are even homeschoolers that let their kids run wild and free. I'm not that mom, and that is not what I promote. So if you are watching this and you are thinking to yourself, but my kids are wild, or my grandchildren are wild and they respect nobody, I will say up front, that is not what I promote. So get them on board with what I actually promote and you will have peace. So it's about being present, but you have to do your part too. And we'll talk about that a little bit later about how to be supportive. So children will not have social awkwardness if you do it right. So you want to make sure that they have social opportunities for sure. Okay. This one is good. I hear this one a lot. Mom won't have the time that she needs to run the household. Which is comes from a fear place of, oh no, if she's with the kids all day, the house is going to be destroyed and I'm going to come home at night and she's not going to have anything left for me. And you know what? That is a very valid concern. Very valid concern. However, it's not usually the case. What tends to happen, especially if we have a mom that is doing the things that I recommend and following our program, is that I teach her how to manage homes. You know, I can't have five children and have them running like feral cats. I learned early on how to manage those five children and how to manage my household and how to make sure that everybody ate, and how to make sure the house wasn't destroyed. I learned that early on. So I share that with the families that we work with. There is absolutely a possibility to have a homeschooling environment where your house isn't always destroyed and where your wife still has energy for you at the end of the day. But again, it's all about like the support element that we'll talk about in a little bit. Okay, so another one that I get just about overall homeschooling objections is, how do you measure your child's progress when you don't test them regularly? That is such a valid concern, because I think on the outside, it just looks like it's rainbows and daisies all the time and that we just have fun at Disneyland, which we do have fun at Disneyland. But I'm going to tell you, and I don't know, I know that there are homeschooling programs that test regularly, but I teach parents how to evaluate their children on a regular basis. So I do believe evaluation has immense importance. It's incredibly important to understand where your children are and to know whether or not you need to dig deep some in one direction, or whether or not you need to consider, is there a learning disability going on here, or whether or not you need to up your game. So I absolutely believe in some sort of evaluation. It does not need to be in the form of test taking, because the beautiful thing is when you are homeschooling and you are working one-on-one with a child, you know if they get it. A teacher in a classroom with 30, 20 kids, even 15 kids, she's not going to know if they get it. She's not going to have that sort of intimate interaction every day to know whether or not they're understanding and they're grasping concepts. The homeschooling mom does. And if she does proper evaluations throughout the year, then she knows like where they started, sort of what the benchmark is, where they need to go, or the baseline, like, and where you're going from here. So when somebody comes to homeschooling, they've been in public school setting, or they come to work with me and they've done homeschooling in other ways, the very first thing we do is sort of this baseline. I say, talk to me about where your child has been. And what I am super impressed about from moms that have been homeschooling with other methods and they come to Waldorf Education is often they know exactly where their child is. This is where I feel like they are with math. This is where I feel like they are with reading. But when they come from a public school setting, I want you to hear me. Often parents know nothing. Do you want to be the parent who knows nothing about your child's education? Or do you want to have an intimate knowledge and a hand in them learning? Because that's what this is about. So with regards to measurable progress, absolutely there is measurable progress. You just, with regards to, and I'll talk about this deeper here in a minute, but with regards to how we lay out homeschooling, each block gives us an opportunity to have a subject for 4 weeks, sometimes three, sometimes six. At the end of that block, I teach women, moms, and dads how to evaluate the progress. How did you do? How did they do? Are they retaining the information? Because that gives you valuable information. You can always go back then and add another layer if something's not sticking. You don't have that opportunity in public school. What tends to happen in public schools, if you have a child, or even in private school, if you have a child that's fallen behind, they get stuck in a resource classroom, where then there's the stigma of the resource. There's no resource in homeschool. I will say that I keep transcripts. So I didn't always do this. I started doing it when the second time we went to court with my ex-husband, because he wanted to know what they were doing. He has that right to know what they're doing. You have that right to know what they're doing. So I started keeping a transcript. I started writing down everything that they were doing, everything. And one thing that I recommend, if you are maybe an ex-spouse that's watching this, that's been sent to you by, your ex-wife or whoever, I recommend in those situations that mom keeps a blog, a private blog. You can do it really easy. It's free, blogspot.com. You can start a blog that way. And I recommend what she does is she, every week, she puts up all of the work from the kids from the week. And she does a complete evaluation. This is what we got done this week. Here's what we didn't get done. So that way, and the reason why I did that is because I didn't want to have to talk to my ex-husband. Usually ex-spouses don't love like getting on the phone and talking to one another. This provided, and the courts were super impressed that this is what I suggested and this is what we did, because it provided me with a way to have accountability so that he could see what their work was. It also provided accountability for him, because then the blog could track how often he logged in to see it. And that way, you're both on accountability. Mom's got accountability for the schooling part, and dad's got accountability for actually caring what it is that they're doing. And so we want to be really careful about sort of how we bring that about, because we shouldn't always doubt what mom's trying to do. Okay, let's see. I'm looking at my notes here. Why is testing bad? I don't think that testing is bad for older children. I definitely believe that it messes with the minds of younger children. So I usually, while I have tested my children in the past, we usually wait until at least fifth grade if possible. It's not always been possible. So, but I would say that this worry that your children wouldn't be able to pass standardized tests, and we'll talk about that more with regards to Waldorf in a minute, I wouldn't stress about it. I really wouldn't. But you can, if you are worried about it, you can say to your wife, I would not, if you're the mom or the mother-in-law, do not say this to your daughter-in-law. It's so rude. If you're the dad, though, and you really want to have there be that extra layer of accountability, ask, can we please test once a year? There's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do that. I know a lot of families that test once a year. The reason why they test a few times a year in school, in the public school system, they usually do a round of testing, like during, sometime during the first semester, a round of testing in the middle, and then a round of testing at the end. But here's something I'm going to tell you. Most schools do not have the money to do that testing as often as, like, even the Common Core standards say they should. So most schools will opt for once a year, and it's usually at the end of the year. So if that's not your public school experience, and oh no, your school down the street tests more, great. But you know, here's the thing. You've got this evaluation system, again, that I have highly recommend. That's going to tell you how far they're going. If you want that extra added layer, then ask that your partner tests at the end of the year. Do not ask that they test, though, until at least third or fourth grade. And have open communication about it. If you're saying, I want to see measured results, understand why you're wanting to see those and see if there are other ways that you can see those measured results. Because any homeschooling mom that is truly homeschooling and wanting to sort of, watch their children grow, she's already internalizing all of this. She's already thinking to herself, okay, Johnny really needs to step up his reading. She's already thinking that. You being over her telling her that, it's not going to help. So what will help, though, is if you say, is there something I can do to help Johnny with his reading? I want to help in this process. So now we're going to step into objections that we get specifically about Waldorf. If you are listening to this and you're like, I don't even understand what in the heck Waldorf is, I'm going to give you the Cliff's Notes version. Waldorf is a method of education that brings age-appropriate material at the right time. And I'm going to go a little more in-depth about that here in just a second, but that's like the elevator pitch for what Waldorf is. Generally, what happens with regards to like whether or not public school teachers think it's valid, if there's a public school teacher that is open and sees that the public school system is pretty broken and that all she's doing is teaching to the test, she's often clamoring for something like this, and she has major aha moments. I've had conversations with public school teachers in Barnes & Noble and in other situations where they hear what we do in Waldorf education, they're like, what? That would be so much easier than what I do now. So, yes.
Stephanie Reyna says, I feel like my husband is very understanding of where our daughter is because he talks to her and she loves to tell daddy about what she learns.
I think that's such a beautiful dynamic. Such a beautiful dynamic. When children are excited to tell dad what they are learning. I'm going to tell you, if you're listening now and your child doesn't tell you, they're worried. You will not care, or you will not value what they have to tell you. And ouch, I know that stings. And you might be like, okay, lady, I'm done listening to this video. But that's the truth. Children, when they're comfortable and they're excited and they know that you are supportive, they will come to you and they will tell you everything. Everything. It's all about their comfort, their level of comfort. Okay, so the first objection I get with Waldorf is, Waldorf is soft or slow on academics. So, that's a bunch of hogwash, especially in the homeschooling setting. Now, I do things a little bit differently than other Waldorf curriculum. I will just say that up front. And a lot of that comes from my experience where I've been, being around the court system and having to sort of make sure that what I was doing actually, you know, fit the Waldorf curriculum and fit what was needed by the courts for our situation. So a lot of what I teach comes from this vast amount of experience that I've had. So in grade one, I want to talk about this really quickly. This is where people often get hung up. I don't personally believe that Waldorf is slow for academics. I do believe, yes, we wait until seven or nearly seven to introduce grade one and to start talking deeply about reading and all of those things. That's not late. What we have is a whole bunch of people in society who think that we should be learning at three. And here's what I want to tell you. At three, they're not ready. They're just not ready. That's why if you've been, I have moms that send me a message every now and again. They go, my husband said I could homeschool, which is like the crappiest sentence ever, because it's no, like my husband said I could. This should be a conversation you have together. But my husband said I could homeschool if I could teach my four-year-old how to read. So here's what I want you to know about reading. And I want you to think back on your own reading experience. And then I want you to realize that your own reading experience was only one experience out of an infinite number of possibilities of learning to read. So reading is the process of connecting the sounds and the letters. The letters are very sort of archaic to a child. They don't mean anything. They mean nothing. That's why when a young child is just writing and doodling, they'll write numbers and letters at the same time. They don't understand the difference between numbers and letters until you start introducing that to them. So this whole dance that we do with reading is this combination of understanding the phonetic laws, the you know, phonics, and memorization. If you teach a child to read before then, generally, not always, generally they're just memorizing. And that sets them up for struggles later. So the reason why we bring the alphabet the way we do in Waldorf is because we want the child to have a relationship with every letter and a deep understanding of every letter and the sound that it makes. And so in doing that, we see reading in them in a much different way and a much more real, succinct, almost spiritual way, in that it's their whole body that's involved in it. So what I generally see is that when we have children that are on this Waldorf path, by the time they've introduced all the consonants and they're ready to introduce that first vowel, because that's the other thing that people say, oh, Waldorf is weird, you don't do all the letters in order. Nope, we don't. We just don't. We do the vowels last. The reason being, the first day that you've introduced the short vowel after all the other letters are introduced, that first day that child can read. You work on that very first day. So the very first time you introduce the A sound, you got cat, bat, sat, mat, all of those letters, then the first day they can read. Excuse me. So I want you to, if you are listening to this, and you're like, oh, but that I learned to read when I was four. Guess what? I learned to read when I was in kindergarten as well. And I have dyslexia that was hidden because I learned to read so early. So some people go, oh, well, if you have dyslexia, then you shouldn't have been able to read. And that's a lie. It was easy to hide because I learned a lot of memorizing. And I had struggles like throughout my childhood and into my teens, until I really realized what was going on. And that's not a slight or anything on my mom or anything like that, because I think that in the 70s, I'm at 46 years old, in the 70s, that was not, that was just starting to come up. And if you could read, then there was nothing else wrong with you. There was no other reason to look deeper. Where it showed up for me was, even though I could read, I had major, major comprehension issues, even into college. I had to come up with my own method of how to study. And it wasn't just, oh, read and write notes. No, I had to read, review, listen to some audio, watch some documentary, then write notes, then read again. So there was a whole other process that had to go into play. And the fact that I was reading early meant that it was that any struggles like that were not seen. So we focus on in our culture sort of the wrong things, when really what we should be focusing on is, let's let's get those letters in a very deep way so the children have a relationship with them. So generally, if you have a properly placed first grader, so that means they are seven before March. So they're seven before March. That would be first grade. Some people will say seven before April, but I really, in all the thousands of families I've worked with, I really like to see children that are the age of their grade for as much of the grade as possible. So grade one in Waldorf is intended for the seven-year-old or the child that's nearly seven. So you start that letter introduction in September. By about January, February, they're ready to really jump off with reading. And I have to tell you, that means that they're doing it every day. And that means if you're following our curriculum, that mom is actually doing the things that I say to do. So those are questions to ask for sure. If you are the other parent or the grandparent and you're wondering, what the heck, I don't know what's going on here. I need to know, like, I need to be able to measure this. Then your job is to say, what can I do to help? Sometimes that might be to sit and practice with that child. But you got to sit down and practice with that child in love and patience, and not in a place of frustration of the other parent. So, and I would say if you are an ex-spouse, I would absolutely ask, what things can I buy for my house so that when this child comes to see me, I can help? So, and then you listen to what he or she says. And the reason being, the way the brain works, it's not ready. It's not ready because when they're so little, there are so many other things that are going on. They're just not ready yet. They're still developing. They're still learning how to get dressed. We can't poke too much into them. I'd really like, there was this time in I think from the 70s to probably the 90s, and it's probably still out there where they say children are sponges that just need to soak up information. No, they are not. Children are vessels that have all the information in them already when they get here. Your job is to draw it forth at the right time. When you're trying to draw it forth too early, other things will suffer. Other things will suffer. So I'm just going to put that out there. I would say things that suffered for me, and I actually think for you too, honey, because you didn't ride a bike. You struggled with that. You had other issues. Things that happened physically. There are many, many markers. And I'm not saying that happens across the board, because there's always going to be that one person that said, I learned to read when I was four and I'm perfect. Great. Great for you. You are the exception to the rule. That does not happen very often. Okay. The other thing to know about grade one that will actually put your child ahead of their public school peers. So hear me. Waldorf children learn all four math processes on the same day. They learn to add, subtract, multiply, and divide at the same time. The reason behind that being, we want a wholeness attitude when it comes to math. When we teach children just how to add for a year and then just how to subtract for a year, which is the public school model, and then just how to multiply or divide, there's a separation there with regards to math. So many children struggle with math because they're trying to put addition in a box and then subtraction in a box. They don't see that it's all interwoven, that it all comes together. And when a child can see that all four of those processes work together, then they have a wholeness in math. And even if they have math struggles later, because, fractions are hard or decimals aren't fun, they still have this wholeness in this foundation. You will not get that in a public school setting. You will not get that in another homeschool setting if you're not doing things the Waldorf way. So there is definitely method behind that how, like the way we bring that out. So let me see here. One of the objections I had was, when we go to Sunday school, when we go to Scouts, my child is the only one that's not reading. So this is the way I go about that. You have to take responsibility as a parent to front load everything. Everything. It's your job. It's your job. Your job is to keep that child from feeling like they're less than or anything like that. So your job is to go to that Sunday school teacher, and your job is to say this. You can ask my child to do anything, but do not ask them to read until I come back and tell you that they're reading. That's your job. whether it be the scout leader, the Sunday school teacher, somebody at a non-Waldorf co-op, whatever it is, whoever it is, your job is to go to them and say, my child is on their own path, not on the same drone path that all these other children are on. So when I come back and tell you, hey, they're reading, ask them to read, then you can ask them. In the meantime, you can ask them to wipe off the chalkboard. You can ask them to gather papers. You can ask them to be your helper in some other way. You may not ask them to read. So front load this, moms and dads and grandma, because if you don't front load it, you're going to have a struggling, frustrated child. And with this method works, and it works all the time. If you do it this way, it works. But the thing is, you want to really guard that child's spirit and soul with regards to what things other people are poking into them. So be really super careful about what their experiences are. Now, of course, I'm going to have those people that are going to say to me, and if this is going through your head, if they just went to public school, they'd toughen up and they wouldn't be such a sissy. Get over yourself. Seriously. Who wants to hurt a young child? Who thinks that's okay? I don't think that's okay. I was bullied in school. Eric was bullied in school. As a parent, if I can help my child overcome those situations and gain resilience in a different way, I'm absolutely going to do it. That doesn't mean they're not going to be ready for life. We still put them in situations where they have to critically think on a regular basis. And we still put them in situations where they're going to have opposition on a regular basis, because they do need to learn opposition, but they don't need to learn it in the soul-crushing way that it happens often in a school setting. And that actually can happen in a Waldorf school setting too, not just in a homeschool setting or in a public school setting. I have seen it happen in Waldorf school settings, and a lot of those children come and join our program because when we teach children how to love other cultures, but not how to love the brother that's sitting next to them, we're failing. We're failing. It's not just about what's out there. It's about what's right next to us. So we have to deeply, deeply look at each one of those things. Okay. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. No. Okay. Let's see here. Waldorf is a very efficient way of teaching. So I have people say to me, I don't understand this block thing. Like, why don't you do all the subjects in a day? So Waldorf is a very efficient way of teaching because of how things are taught. So the how of it is, you know, you might have a lesson block that's just, let's just say, is botany. We're going to talk about botany. So we've got a fifth grader. They're learning botany. And you might ask yourself, okay, but where's history? Where's writing? Where's reading? All of that is within that lesson block. Not necessarily history, because we're focused on science right now. So Waldorf is laid out into blocks after first grade. First grade is still sort of blocks, but from beyond there, you've got blocks of, it might be a math block, it might be a language arts block, it might be a history block, it might be a science block. That does not mean that no math is done. If you're in a history or science block, it doesn't mean there's no math done. The older child will do some math problems every day. The younger child will skip count and circle time. They'll be practicing their times tables, they'll be working on all of that. So those things are happening orally. They're not happening on paper. Who the heck invented worksheets? The only way that worksheets are efficient, hear me, is if you have a classroom full of 20 kids. And you don't know where your children are and you're trying to create busy work. That's all worksheets are. It's busy work. So when you have an intimate setting where you know your student, you can dismiss that. So what we've got here is maybe, like, again, a botany block. So within that botany block, they're learning the science part about botany for usually 4 weeks or so, very dialed in. They're also doing reading about the subject, so you're getting the reading piece in. They're doing regular weekly writing and drawing, so they're getting an art lesson from mom. That's why she's been drawing with coloring block crayons and painting like crazy, so that she can be ahead of your kids. So they're getting an art lesson. They're getting a writing lesson, What I find is that children that actually follow our recommendations for writing with Waldorf are incredibly strong writers. But that means mom has to make them do it, for sure. So you get all of those things within one lesson block. The traditional way of schooling would be, oh, we're going to have an English lesson, and we're going to have a math lesson, and then we're going to have a language arts lesson, and then we're going to... Waldorf is very efficient in that it brings you all of those things. There's no separate English teacher in the Waldorf school, generally. Not in the lower grades, at least. In the upper grades, when they're starting to write more papers, sometimes there's somebody that comes in, but it's very efficient. There's no extra teachers. You are doing all of those things in one lesson block. So hopefully that answers that question. I do want to talk about this worry about moving your children to public school. So, excuse me. I would say don't worry about it. If you for some crazy reason have to send your child before they're reading, that can generally be fixed in not too much time. So I wouldn't even worry about that. I would say after first grade, they're not going to have any issues at all. Some people will say after third grade, I don't buy that. I don't buy that. If you do what I tell you to do, then your child will be reading and ready to go. You might have, they might be a little bit slower with reading at first, but what I find is the slower the reading means they're taking it in more, means they're going to be stronger readers later. And so, you know, just overall, I wouldn't stress about that. I do want to tell you about my son. So I have my second son. He's 20 now. When he was in 10th grade, he chose to live with my ex-husband and the rest of us moved to California. And it was a great move for all of us and a great choice for him. But the question that came, so what are we going to do? He's been homeschooled his whole life. How is that going to work? And so he went and I wrote out a transcript because I've been keeping transcripts. Remember I told you that? I keep transcript. And I handed it to my ex-husband, who then threw it in the trash can. Didn't even take it to the school. So I took my son to the school and with the exception of a couple of weeks with a tutor for Common Core math, which is different than regular normal math, that we all learned in school, he didn't have any struggles, not one. In fact, these were the comments from his teachers. They would call me two states away and say, thank you for bringing us such a flexible learner. Thank you for helping your child love other people. Thank you for, you know, having a child that knows how to sit still and actually listen to the lesson. Thank you. He had teachers that called me instead of my ex-husband. When my son was a senior, I got this frantic phone call. Mom, I don't know what I'm going to do. They're saying I'm going to have to go to summer school. They're saying I'm not going to graduate. I said, what are you talking about? I said, didn't you and your dad give him the transcript that I gave you? And he said, no, no, no. So I called the school counselor. And I said, I'm his mom. I provided a transcript. My ex-husband didn't bring it. Can I send you the transcript? Yes, yes, please send us the transcript. I sent the transcript. My son had to take, like, this was the beginning of 12th grade. He didn't have to take home, he took, like yoga his second semester of 12th grade because he had already had all of it. When they got his transcript, he had way more credits than he even needed to graduate. So because they kept such good records, it helped him. So keep good records. Keep good records so that when you are in that spot, if you're faced with that, you can hand it over to somebody and say, here's where they've been. And there are, of course, going to be some snarky public schools that are going to say, I'm not going to accept your transcript. Then I would say, then test them. Place them where you want them to be. Place them. Don't be afraid. Because when we live in fear, bad stuff happens. Stop living in fear. Look at it head on. Go towards it. Decide what your goal is. Make it happen. Don't live in fear. Do not live in fear. Let's see. Talked about my methods of evaluation. Okay, I want to, and Eric's going to post this link in the comments over at Facebook. But for those of you who are watching on Instagram and YouTube, we'll put it in the YouTube comments as well when we put it up. But I want you to hear me. There is a website that tracks famous Waldorf graduates. And they are from all walks of life. You've got actors, you've got writers, you've got musicians, you've got athletes, you've got heads of state, you've got scientists, you've got from all walks of life. so that you can see that this is indeed academically rigorous. In fact, I have to tell you, one of my clients, her son went to Yale. And I know that's not the first one. That's just the one that I remember. You can absolutely send your children, or they can aspire to go wherever they want. Because what happens in 12th grade is not happening in first and second grade. Y'all need to quit looking at the end when you're in the beginning. Just walk through it. It's all good. You don't have to stress about it so much. Your child will not be illiterate. They will actually be more literate, not illiterate, more literate than their peers. Let's see. So I talked about age-appropriate learning, how we focus on block study. Again, there is no such thing as being behind. That's just crap that they give you in society. It's just crap. It's crap. And I have to ask you, especially this part. As an adult, when was the last time you walked up to your neighbor or somebody at the grocery store and said, how far did you go on math? People don't do that because it's rude. Don't do that. So this whole concept of being behind is a societal concept that's just plain garbage. Just plain garbage. So don't play into that. Let's see. Oh, this is a good one. The Waldorf method doesn't meet state standards. Again, hogwash. So in the United States, they usually use the Common Core as the standard. And I want you to understand that the Common Core is two things. It's a set of standards and it's a curriculum. And they're not like what you don't have to use both of them together. So often the state will say, must meet Common Core standard, blah, blah, blah. Well, Waldorf does meet that. We might not be following the Common Core curriculum the way it's written. Absolutely meet the standard. And I actually help families see that are a part of our program. So if you are part of our program and you're trying to help dad see or your mother-in-law see or whatever, I want you to pull up the Writing Your Own Curriculum mom lesson, and I want you to download the details for the grades, because in there I give Steiner's recommendation, the Common Core recommendation, how to meet it, and my notes. So you have all of that, and I would show that to mom or grandma or dad so that they can see that it absolutely indeed does meet that. I think that's a bunch of hogwash. You do need to understand your state laws. So, you know, you want to be able to comply with them. You don't want to be that weird homeschooler that ends up on the news and blah, blah, blah. No, don't be that person. Instead, be ahead. Know what the law is. Know how to protect yourself. A lot of families join hslda.net.org, the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association. There's like an annual fee that you can, it's not very much, that you can join and be part of them for a year. And they sort of back you up if you need help with the state. They do not back you up if you need help with a custody battle, but they do provide a lot of good information. So a lot of parents really like that. So now I've gone through the objections. Now I'm going to talk to you, Dad, Grandma, Aunt Susie, whoever it is, loving neighbor. I want you to sort of listen to me for a minute. I'm also a coach, so I ask difficult questions sometimes. Often the questions that I think really are bubbling up and that I've heard dads and grandmas express are, wasn't my schooling enough? Isn't what I had enough for you? Here's the thing. Don't we all want more for our kids than what we had ourselves? Whether it be a better house, a better car, a better education. So put that one aside. What your partner or daughter-in-law or daughter wants to do is not a reflection on you and what you did as a parent. It's a reflection on her dreams and her aspirations for her children. It doesn't have a whole lot to do with you. So don't take it so personal. I love this one. This is one I get from dads a lot. I don't want my kid to be different. So you want your kid to be a sheep? That's my question. You want them to be a sheep that's just exactly like everybody else, that there's no difference in them at all? Because that's pretty boring. We have enough sheep in our culture. Enough sheep. Not just this method, but homeschooling in general, produces children that aren't sheep. produces children that can think flexibly and can think for themselves, and who aren't always waiting for somebody to tell them what to do in order to do it. So I want you to really think about this. I don't want my children to be different. Instead, think, gosh, my kid's different, and that's pretty awesome. So whether it be, you know, you've got a child with special needs, or you've got a child that, you know, that this homeschool route is just different from what you know, don't push it away just because it's different. Ask yourself, why am I so bothered by being different? Why am I so bothered by that? Why do I have a need to be exactly like everybody else? Because that's the bigger question. That's the bigger question. Okay, let's see. So now I'm going to get into how you can support your homeschooler. Be open. Be open and be willing to learn. Ask questions. You know, one of the struggles that I used to have with my ex-husband was he'd be like, oh, you've got this. Well, then I did. I had it. But when it came time for him to have his own testimony of it, he didn't, because he didn't take the time to learn. So hence fighting in court twice. Be willing to take the kids so that she can plan. Because hear me, teachers plan. So do not give her a reason to have to beg you for time alone to plan. She cannot plan when she has a house full of children. Think about it. Think about all the teachers that you loved in school. They took time to plan. You need to give your wife, your daughter-in-law, the opportunity to not have children around and to plan their lessons so that she can be ready to teach school. So that's a huge one. It's a huge one. So really your question after you get done with this video should be, how can I help you? In fact, I always tell my husband, and I sort of talk about this all the time, the sexiest thing a husband can say to a wife is, how can I help? Not why aren't you doing it this way? Or if you did it this way, it would be so much easier. The sexiest thing he can say is, how can I help? Because that helps her breathe out and helps her be willing to communicate with you. Okay, let's see. Be willing to put in the time yourself. Like, be willing to be the homeschool dad. And what does that mean? Like, you might be thinking, but I have this busy job and I have all this other. Do you want to be known by your busy job on your tombstone? Or do you want to be known as the dad who actually, like, do you want your kids to be like, yeah, I miss my dad so much because he did so many things with me. So you really need to sort that out, because nobody was ever really excited that their tombstone said CEO of or head accountant at. No, they want it to say loving father. Think about that very deeply, please. Be proud of who they are. They need your love and support. So be proud of them. Be excited to tell people about what they're doing. I guarantee you, if your child is following the Waldorf method, they're going to be doing stuff that your neighbor's kid is never going to do in school, like ever. And that is not to their detriment at all. It's absolutely to like their betterment. Ask if you can help. One of the things that I think is so amazing is when dad has a skill, whether it be a professional skill or something he was just good at in school, that he can share in homeschooling. It makes mom's job so much easier. So say, how can I help? And don't be butthurt if she says, well, you're a mechanical engineer. You cannot teach our three-year-old how a steam engine works. Don't be butthurt about that. Your job should then be like, at what point in the curriculum would I be useful? Because I really want to be able to bring my expertise. That's the better question. Okay, help her stay on task. Ask her, how are lessons going? Ask to see lesson plans. I think that's, and there's probably a bunch of moms that are like groaning right now if they're listening, but here's the thing. Ask to see lesson plans. That tells her you are interested in what your children are doing. Ask her. It's super important to her. If you said, just, I would love to know what they're learning this week. Ask. That's one reason we always recommend having a family meeting every Sunday or Saturday, like before the next week. Because it gives the opportunity for mom to talk about, like, here are the lesson blocks that we're working on this week. And for dad to be like, oh, really? Tell me about that. T- Take an interest in your children. Don't leave it all up to her. Let's see. Make sure she plans. Ask to see the plans. And then, okay, I'm about to close up here because I know we've been going for an hour. It's been a good hour though, right? Husbands, love your wife. Tell her she's amazing. She's the one in the trenches every dang day with your kids. Tell her she's amazing. And if you are the mom or the mother-in-law or the aunt, I want you to hear me. Love them and then butt out. This is not your child. This is not your child. You had your opportunity to raise children. Now it's her turn. Give her the love and support she needs and butt out. You can say things to her. Is there something I can do to help? Or I would love to read more about Waldorf. Do you have a book resource that you can share with me? That's how you support her. You support her by actually supporting her. We have this crazy culture that thinks the only way that we can interact is by being mean to each other. No, support her and love her. Anyway, thank you for joining us. I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and we'll see y'all later.